This is the October 31 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Aaron Curtis is with Midco. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And Jim McCormick is here, too, from agmarket.net in Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. I urge you to go there now and to get yourself registered for the Farm Assets and Illinois Farm Economic Summit conferences. Those are coming up in the month of December. All four of them will include all of the Illinois Farm Economic Summit presentations made by the Farm Doc or Ag Econ team from the University of Illinois. And the Farm Assets Conference will include the crop scientist from the U of I, along with Matt Bennett and a few others to talk about the marketplace. Matt, thank you for doing that. I appreciate that as well. Let's get started with a series of things that we should talk about, though, first. And we'll begin with your colleague, Matt, Jim McCormick at agmarket.net. What's on your list for this week?
Well, I think first we need to talk a little bit about exports, Todd. I mean, they've been phenomenal. Corn's currently running about 41% ahead of last year's pace. Beans are running about 13% ahead of last year's pace. They started out really slow. They have gone gangbusters the last 4 to 6 weeks. Million-dollar question, is this front-running in front of the presidential election next week, or is this a game change and they're actually going to come in and buy more than what the USDA has currently got penciled in?
Aaron Curtis at Midco, what's on your list?
Well, we've been in a 25-cent range in these corn since dating all the way back to July. So as we continue to move forward, is this the trend for this winter moving forward? Or are we kind of stuck in this range bound? And what are some factors that maybe pull us out of that range here over the next 2 to 3 months.
And Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. And thank you, Matt, for joining the crew in December at the I Hotel in Champaign for the Farm Assets Conference.
Oh, I'm glad to be there for sure. I think it'd be interesting to just talk a little bit. Of course, we've got a WASD out coming this next week. We'll be talking maybe a little higher corn, a little lower beans, status quo on corn. I feel like a lot of folks are thinking lower on beans. I think it'd be interesting to, talk about that. And then the other big question, I think a lot of producers that are listening to this is, what do I do with the bushels that have gone in the bin? I think all three of us have probably had that question plenty here lately. So I think a discussion on that matter would, be a good thing to go over.
Let's start with that WASD and crop production report that's due out Friday of next week. Will yields change, do you think, Matt? And how will USDA handle soybean in particular?
That's a good question. Jim and I and the other guys, we discussed that at length today. I will tell you, whenever you see our estimates come out, you'll see that actually on corn, we just kind of kept things the same. We had some differing opinions. We've all talked to a lot of different growers about what their actual results were. To me, I think corn, I'd be hard pressed to think it moves lower. But you said you really want to focus on soybeans. So we actually called corn the same, from October to November, no change. I'm sure they're going to do something there. We did make some demand revisions we can talk about later. As far as beans are concerned, we went down 0.8 bushels from 53.1 down to 52.3. We felt like it's a pretty common theme for growers to say they were disappointed in results. Some of that may have to do with awfully high expectations, if we're quite frank about it. And clearly, you had such a dry August weather pattern that it really put us in a situation where some of these beans maybe didn't quite live up to what we thought they once were. So we feel like this bean yield is going to scale back.
Aaron Curtis, from the elevator grain shipping side, how much of a difference does it make when soybeans come in so far under the desired moisture content?
Well, it does add up over time, right? Especially we got pretty dry in a couple different aspects. Early in bean harvest, we got down to, 8 to 10% moisture. Things perked up a little bit there when we got some rain, and then they got pretty dry at the end a little bit. So you are talking some bushels overall that does impact the balance sheet here at some point. I agree with Matt. I think we're going to see bean yield inch back a little bit. I think from a elevator standpoint, though, bean harvest was fast and furious. We really didn't have much of a break. You know, most producers focused on beans pretty much extensively there during bean harvest. So we did see some corn space being used for bean space just to be able to get through the last part of bean harvest. I think the other thing on beans, too, was that the farmer was fairly active on selling beans early. And then once cash beans slipped below $10, I mean, it shut off pretty quickly. So, you know, get into this a little bit later, but that really led to some fireworks on the SIF bean side. It led to some fireworks in the nearby bean spreads. Some of that's alleviated itself now, but, you know, we saw some pretty extensive basis improvement overall, especially along the river during the October month. So as we were harvesting a record bean crop, it sure didn't feel like that with what basis was doing, especially towards the tail end. But on yields anyway, I think bean yields will come down just a little bit. And I would say corn yields probably inch up 3 to 4 tenths, so just slightly over 184 in November.
Because beans were harvested so quickly, Aaron, by a little bit, do you mean not a lot of change in your opinion?
Yeah, I would say down 3 to 4 tenths is kind of what we're looking for here. Just to kind of collaborate with what Matt said, a lot of reports, right, especially as we got into the later beans, how they really tailed off in terms of expectations. Still some double crops still to go here in Illinois. So we've got a little bit of that still to work through. But I would say 3 to 4 tenths reduction on bean yield is kind of what we're thinking here.
And Jim McCormick, anything else to add to the yield side, whether it be for corn or beans?
No, I mean, you, Matt, pretty much gave our viewpoint of the company, and I pretty much agree with them. So, yeah, corn may be a shade bigger, beans lower. I'm in the same camp.
You mentioned that exports have been big and wondered aloud whether they can be maintained. I know that Matt told me during the closing market report Thursday afternoon, he was of the idea that this has been a front-loaded export marketing year so far. I'm wondering whether you think that that pace can be maintained.
I personally think it's been front-loaded. I mean, if you look at when it really started to accelerate the sales, Todd, a lot of it happened when the essentially, you know, the presidential race became more of a toss-up. Like I said, we're less than a week out. By all polls, it's a toss-up. And I think that was enough to just unnerve the end-user buyers around the world. Remember, President Trump is threatening to ramp up 10, 20% tariffs, not just on the Chinese. He's talking about doing it to everyone. He's talking about doing it to Mexico. We ship a lot of corn to Mexico. Now, Mexico needs our corn, but we also buy a lot of automobile parts and autos that are made in Mexico. And I think it just unnerved a lot of people. And then we'll see what happens. I mean, if Trump does get elected, it's going to be a dynamic change that we're going to have to reassess. But even if he doesn't get elected, then you still have some policies that, you know, that the Democrats could put into play that could change it. But I don't even think it was more front-loaded. It was a pragmatic business decision to make to manage risk. And what I think, Todd, is unfortunately, as we get in the latter half of this year, I think the sales, these fantastic weekly sales numbers are going to trail off. And that would happen if it was all front-loaded.
Does the futures market, in your opinion, at this point, reflect the export pace being maintained or simply being front-loaded and it wasn't as impressed with the export pace as maybe the numbers would expect you to be?
Well, I think if you look at the price of corn, you know, these corn trading here at 410, you know, corn in early September was trading at 385, spot corn is trading now 365. So I would say, yes, I think the market has reflected this incredible run of sales. Like I said, we're looking at about a 41% increase from last year. So it's a good sales run. Like I said, the question is it front-loaded or not? Because if it's front-loaded, then we're going to see disappointing sales from here on out. And, you know, that will be, as the old line says, you got to keep a bull market fed. And I think that could be a little bit negative going into first notice in the December corn contract in about a month.
Aaron Curtis, that brings me to you. You talked about a 25-cent trading range for corn. It's really narrow. Do you see that changing?
Not in the short term. I think we've got too many outside market things going on. Obviously, got payrolls report here at the end of the week. We've got election next Tuesday. We've got a Fed meeting coming up next week as well. So I think there's some dollar implications, some equity implications that are going to keep the futures market somewhat quiet. Now, going into that crop report next week, we could see some volatility increase a little bit, but I still think the USDA is too low on exports at 2325. I think we're going to be closer to 2500 here before the end of the year, or before that it's all said and done. I think US is competitive on corn exports all the way out through next spring. I think that's going to continue to be supportive to the corn futures market. So, you know, the rallies are going to be somewhat limited because we are obviously in the middle of producing one of the biggest crops on record. But I think it does provide underlying support to the corn market here moving forward. So I think that gives a little bit of hope for some further increases in corn price here moving forward through the winter. But the bean side, though, on the export side, I guess I'm not quite as friendly there moving forward. I think especially now that we've seen some pretty aggressive planting pace going on in Brazil, I think that's going to limit some of our exports moving forward from February forward. And, you know, the fact that, you know, China is not even keeping pace with a year ago on bean sales through the end of October here raises a little bit of concern, especially with what Jim mentioned with that kind of that tariff thing kind of hanging over our head on the bean side.
Matt Bennett, when you're thinking about the demand side of your balance sheet, what do you see for changes next week?
Well, we kind of feel like, as far as corn's concerned, that, you know, November isn't always a time that we see the exports adjusted, but we feel like there's a reason the USDA could go up 25 anyway now. I mean, we kind of agree with Aaron that if we can keep this pace, there's no doubt you could see this thing really ramp up later. I don't think they'll take it too far just yet. I tell you, you can make the case for corn usage for ethanol going up a little bit as well. I'm a little hesitant there. The cash the cash market, the margins aren't that great. I'm sure Aaron could tell us more detail there. We're hearing from some of the ethanol guys, though, that, you know, when hedges run out, they're going to be awful thin. But as of right now, we've had a really strong pace. But we kind of feel like we're going to see demand pop up anywhere from 25 to 50 million. You know, and so maybe you get this thing down, I don't know, maybe 195. I believe that our official estimate is 1949. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't think that they're going to adjust production. It's pretty tough to tell. We don't feel like they will substantially. And so right now we're of the opinion that the demand increases are probably going to offset any sort of production increase. That's pretty much where we're at. I think those are the only two that we feel like the USDA is going to adjust next week. At least that's what we're predicting.
So you're still at about a 2 billion bushel ending stocks then?
Yeah, just a shade under. You know, we're going to take our demand up about 50 million bushels in total, half exports, half ethanol. That's what our team felt like was most appropriate for the time being. We do realize there'll be more adjustments to be made later. And, as of right now, though, we don't expect the USDA to take too big of a chunk here, especially in the November report.
Jim McCormick, I'm hearing him say that you're going to be under 2 billion bushels for agmarket.net. That number will strike some people just because it goes to 1.9 whatever or lower. Does that give a boost to the market? Do you see USDA coming in there? And if they do, what happens to the marketplace?
Well, I think just psychologically, it's like that 99 cents when you try to sell something instead of a dollar. Psychologically, just being a little bit below 2 billion is going to be a little bit friendly. But the reality is you're looking at a carryout that's still growing year on year unless you really do ramp up demand. And demand could get ramped up, Todd. I mean, a lot of that's going to hinge on what the safrinha crop does and how the Ukrainian crop. But, you know, right now I think it's a little bit friendly, but it's probably nothing to break us out of the sideways range we've been in. And we may just stay in this range here just, you know, until we get through the holidays and get that January report when they tend to be a little bit more aggressive on their adjustments.
Aaron Curtis, can you add any color commentary as it's related to the ethanol side of the marketplace, their margins, and how and does it operate seasonally? Because it feels to me often like the fall is the time when the ethanol numbers are really good, and then they begin to fall off as we move into the following months in the winter and springtime.
Yeah, there is a seasonal pattern to it, and we're off to a fairly strong start here on ethanol usage, at least through the middle of October. So that's a good sign. But like Matt mentioned, margins are starting to fade a little bit here as we continue to move out towards a early winter month. So it'll be interesting to continue to see how that operates overall. But I think ethanol production or usage on the corn side continues to hang in there. I don't think we see any sort of downward adjustments at this point. And I would agree with Matt that we probably are due for a little bit of an uptick in ethanol usage as the winter goes on, but it's going to be pretty steady here moving forward, continuing to keep an eye on margins, but not looking for any great change on the balance sheet for ethanol side moving forward. Probably a slight uptick, if anything.
Matt Bennett, have you heard whispers in the marketplace yet about corn acreage going up as anhydrous rigs have been running across the Midwest?
You know, I've heard some of that as well. I think anhydrous rigs, depending on where they're at, has been an interesting thing for me, especially as dry as what we've been. It's just surprising to hear that that's going on, you know, in any great degree. I don't think we had enough moisture in the soil to even think about doing that just yet. But as far as acreage is concerned, you know, whenever you took November 25 beans down the way that we did, you know, at $11, I think some of these folks might have found it a little more palatable, you know, to think about beans, especially with the lower input costs. We all know that from a liquidity standpoint, the grower is probably a little more challenged than they've been in quite some time. U of I put a pretty good study out, and I believe they were showing $30 or $40 an acre loss as kind of an average for the average grower as far as land costs and whatnot. FarmDoc team put that out. But now you're looking at, for instance, NOV 25 beans down here at 1033. So the average producer can't even get $10 out of the field today. And I just don't think that they really like the looks of that too much. I think that if money's not much of a concern, that this corn acreage, you know, could be a pretty interesting story. I don't know that we get wildly carried away once again due to the fact that you've got, you know, maybe a little bit of a money crunch in some situations. But at the same time, Todd, I think that corn acreage, in my from my viewpoint, the way that we stand today, I would say 80-20 at least, that we're going to see corn acreage go up. You know, and I could maybe make a case for 2 or 3 million acre increase over what we saw this year.
Jim McCormick, thinking about acreage, what are you hearing from South America at this point? For quite some time, we heard, oh, it's dry, it's pushed back, it's late. And now that's not something we hear about so much in the marketplace. Have their issues been fixed? And will we hear the resurgence of that once we get to the Safrinha or second crop corn?
Well, as for the beans, the rain pattern changed pretty much. I mean, Todd, there was a lot of hype in September, how dry it was. It was hot. It was dry. The rainy season came in pretty much on target. So it didn't come in early. It came in normal. And so for the beans, that means they easily could have a bumper crop. On top of it, you're probably picking up bean acres in Argentina, Todd, because of the disease problem, the leafhopper problem in Argentina last year. So you're picking up acres there. Then on top of it, believe it or not, you got the Ukrainians talking about planting more bean acres this upcoming year. So without a major weather problem, and right now South America looks good in my opinion, you're going to look at world stocks projected at all-time highs. Then you look at stocks use at the second highest ever. So the plain simple fact is we are going to overload the world with beans. And if China's economy continues to struggle, it's only going to be that much of a problem. And I would argue that if that's the case, we'll be closer to $9 beans by Jan, Feb, March, when we're harvesting beans as opposed to 10. So I am really worried to the downward risk on the beans. As for the corn, what happens, Todd, being the fact we didn't get crop in early, it means the Safrinha crop's going to come in on time to maybe a shade late. That risks the factor that they may run out of water at the wrong time. They take the top end off of that crop, and that could have a very bullish potential, be a very bullish potential story long line down the line, because if you look at the amount of grain in the world exporters' hands, it is some of the tightest we've seen in the last couple of years. So that Safrinha crop will be a game changer, but it's so far down the line, we haven't even planted it yet. I'd be very cautious to get too bulled up on that storyline, because on the other hand, if the safrinha crop is big, Todd, and it goes to $9 beans, does corn not even try to rally? It may actually go down just on the ratios, even though economically it feels like it should due to the tight supplies in the world.
Aaron and Matt, I want to give you something to think about for a second as I ask Jim McCormick about wheat as it's related to Ukraine, Russia area and the dryness there, Jim. But Aaron and Matt, Vladimir Putin has decided to pull out of the free market, relatively speaking, as it's related to making sales of wheat out of his country. And I want to know what impact that might have on the marketplace going forward after it's instituted. And then Jim, of course, coming back to that same area, really dry conditions, emergence probably an issue parts of Ukraine, particularly eastern Ukraine, and into those wheat-growing areas of Russia. How do you see supplies of wheat across the planet?
Overall, they're tightening up. They're just like the corn. They are tightening up. But, you know, one thing you got to be cautious about, Todd, is a dry fall will affect the crop, but it affects abandonment more than anything else. I mean, if we come in here and have really good spring weather, it could mask some of the problems. As they say, wheat is a wheat, you know, is like a weed. It's hard to kill. So it's something we need to keep an eye on, because it is tightening up with Putin essentially trying to make more direct sales. You know, it shows you he's trying to drive the price back up. So, you know, but the winter weather in the Northern Hemisphere is going to be crucial. Here where we're at in Northern Chicago, we missed out on a lot of the rain last night. They've got more coming. But, you know, there's, you know, you're a little bit further west, you go here in the Midwest, not everybody caught this rain. So our wheat crop, you know, the ratings of what, Todd, were the worst in 40 years for the initial wheat ratings. So, you know, the wheat situation is not critical, but it's something we need to keep an eye on.
Aaron Curtis, as you think about, and I don't know whether you've had discussions within Midco itself, what it means for a nation to take on the marketing of its own crop without the use of the free market, how does it change things, if at all?
Well, when you start going away, you know, away from a free market to more direct sales, I think that's something to keep an eye on. But I don't know if it changes the overall landscape when we talk about wheat prices. I think until the world starts shopping at U.S. for wheat, I think wheat market's going to continue to struggle, and that's going to continue to keep a little bit of lid on any chance of a corn recovery. We just, you know, dating back to early 2022, right, when the Ukraine-Russia war first started, right, the anticipation was is that we're finally going to get some wheat export business, and it's never materialized because obviously of what Ukraine and Russia continue to do on the world wheat market. So until we see export sale business starting to turn back towards the U.S. on the wheat side, I think the wheat is going to continue to struggle relatively to corn moving forward. And, you know, we are expecting an uptick in export sales this year, so that is a positive sign. But until we get back in that 900 to 950 million bushel export sales, I think, you know, this $6 level on wheat, 6 to 650, is going to continue to be a limiting factor for futures.
Anything else to add, Matt, on wheat, whether it be production or what Vladimir Putin has been doing with the marketplace?
Not necessarily. I agree with Aaron. You go away from price control, sometimes it's not exactly you know, a great thing. But at the same time, whenever the world looks at what, you know, world supply is, I mean, that's essentially going to be the determining factor, you know, as far as what price structure looks like, as far as your, you know, your originators going out and trying to find wheat. So as far as the weather goes, I mean, we've been thinking, of course, you're going to maybe dial back that Russian wheat crop just a little bit. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. I think we lowered production on the world level and carry out, but it's only like a million, million and a half metric tons is all we were talking. So I don't think there's any gigantic adjustments to be made just yet.
Now, from each of you, I probably ought to talk about what needs to be done with bushels that are in storage. Let's start, Matt, with those that are on the farm in the bin. We'll deal with corn for you and let Jim take on soybeans.
Yeah, I mean, as far as corn that's in the bin, doesn't have anything against it as far as sales. You know, the thing is, there is carry in the market. I believe that the carry could get a little bit bigger, but at the same time, you know, as a grower, if you're putting corn in the bin and you know, a lot of these folks were going in the bin at anywhere from 35 to 45 under this fall. You know, if you're 40 under the Dease right now at 371, you know, if it's going in the bin instead of selling it to the elevator, hedge the carry in the market, go out to the July and sell 440 if you want, you know, and if you get the basis to come back to you, maybe 15, 20 under even, 420 out of the bin sounds a lot better than 370 at the elevator. So I believe that we ought to at least hedge the carry in the market. For those that don't necessarily want to do that just yet, we've seen a lot of folks step in and, you know, sell a few calls against corn, just kind of tempt the corn market to go higher. I'd never sell more than what I've got in the bin, but I certainly think it gives you a little bit of incentive to not get your hands on the cash just yet and wait and see if this thing rallies, because we do expect that the basis will get better. It may not get substantially better, but it should get better. I mean, just evidence this week, you know, I saw at the river down in St. Louis, the cash price going into the weekend was a nickel under, you know, and price for December 1 was 35 over. And so that just shows you how much difference there is between bringing it in when nobody wants it to whenever nobody's really selling corn. And sometimes in December, you can get a little bit of a hot deal there.
Jim McCormick, soybeans on farm storage, what do you do with it?
Right now, I think you got to be, you got to look to try to sell rallies. I think Matt said, I think there is a little bit of a carry in the market. If the temptation is to store it out into the springtime, that's fine. But I would at least recommend buying a put under the market. Like I said earlier in the conversation, Todd, this Brazilian crop could be a monster crop. And if it is as big as it potentially is there, the reality is we're going to lose a lot of demand. Our window to ship beans is right now. We flip that calendar to 2025. When you may be wanting to move the beans, the Chinese may be enticed to buy all the Brazilian beans. So at an absolute minimum, buy a put and put a floor under it just to protect that equity, especially going into the election, being the fact we don't know who's going to be elected, but we do know President Trump has been very, very aggressive telling the world he will put on tariffs much more aggressive than the last time around. And the reality is whenever we get into a tariff fight, usually agriculture is the loser.
Aaron Curtis, for that which is stored at the elevator, both corn and soybeans, what are your expectations?
Yeah, I think basis has an opportunity to get a little better, like Matt said, on corn. I think there's enough of demand base here, especially once we get harvest put away and the farmer kind of largely disappears, so to speak, in terms of that hedge pressure that we've seen during the month of October. So I think that allows for an opportunity to basis to get a little better. You know, I'm a little friendly corn. I think 440 to 450 on March corn is an objective that gets us back up to that kind of that recent high. But, you know, carry is only good if you sell it. So I agree that we got to continue to sell the carry in the market and try to get relatively, you know, close to 40-50% sold if you can here over the next 6 weeks or so on corn. I think selling any sort of rally moving forward is probably a prudent risk management strategy. We have seen quite a bit of interest then in selling cash and buying calls, just some protection, right, in case something does happen in South America, something happens somewhere that changes the dynamic, gives you a little bit of flexibility there. But, you know, any sort of 10 to 20 cent rally in corn, I'd be continuing to add to your risk management.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Jim McCormick and Matt Bennett, both from agmarket.net, and Aaron Curtis from Midco. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.